And welcome to the program on this Thursday afternoon. Hey, it's October 3rd. If anyone gets that reference, I'm glad you got it. It's 107 right now, and this is Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm. Dean and Bridget looking at me confused. They didn't get the reference, but that's okay because it's October 3rd. Bridget, do you get it? Addison, do you get it?
I know it's not May the 4th. What game am I not playing here?
Right,
is this a video game thing?
You guys ever seen Mean Girls?
Mean Girls?
Yeah.
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
That Lindsay Lohan movie.
Right? Do I look like someone who would watch Mean Girls?
Come on, man. I watched Mean Girls. That movie is absolutely hilarious.
What does October 3rd have to do with it? Is there a line in there?
Well, there's a line in there where she's obsessed with this guy, and it was one of her narrated lines was, this was the day that he spoke to me, and it was him turning around, hey, what day is it? And she goes, it's October 3rd.
Okay.
Instead of saying, like, it's a Tuesday or it's Wednesday.
Where did you pull that out of?
Come on, man. It's floating through Facebook.
I'm sure it is.
It doesn't surprise me that you didn't see it. But,
right?
yeah. Well, that's the payback for that reference from yesterday.
Yeah. Keep that in mind.
Anyways, what have you guys been up to today? How's it going on this beautiful, sunny October 3rd afternoon?
Well, I'm 5'2", short and sassy, and this is a great day to be outside.
She
is
sassy.
That's all right to be sassy.
That's right.
We like it.
But how has combining been going?
Lots of pictures from the field.
Yeah, what kind of reports have you gotten, Bridget?
Okay, so no one is saying, wow, this is the best yield I've ever had.
I beg
lots
to differ.
Of discussion. Okay, well, and Justin always will.
You're right.
But lots of questions about moisture. We're seeing some significantly lower moistures, not only in corn, but in soybeans right now. And we also have sugar beets going. I've had a lot of folks that since midnight have been up and lifting and hauling in, and I think it's going pretty smoothly at this point. So let's continue that. If we got 10 solid days without problems, especially any major breakdowns, a majority of the sugar beet crop would be out of the fields.
How's corn been? Like, what percentage are we?
Yield?
Yeah. In terms of harvest, what percentage have we gotten finished?
I don't think we have a lot in North Dakota, at least in this tri-state region.
Okay.
It started, and some folks found that they had soybeans that were a little bit more green, so they went over to combine corn for a while. So there's some variability in it. But overall, people are happy to be getting the crop off. A lot of folks think they'll be wrapped up with all their harvest by Halloween, depending on what you guys say happens for weather.
Right. Well,
we'll try our best to make it not snow.
Right?
Try real hard, too.
Well, and keep in mind, the new LRC brand new cycle starts this weekend. And obviously, the start of each cycle now is going to be on the dry side. Now, how long we continue that dry stretch will play a big part into this coming spring. I mean, if the first 20, 25 days of this new LRC cycle are abnormally dry, that's not good news. As we head into spring and, winter, I'm sure many won't care if we didn't get a lot of snow, but that would definitely impact everything come springtime. So
I'd like some snow. Yeah. I was kind of bummed last year.
It was quiet.
Like the trees were shiny for 3 days and that was about it.
I saw someone's messages this morning. Didn't we have snow on the ground like 4 years ago on this day?
On the 9th?
Well,
the 2020? Next week is the anniversary of the big blizzard back in 2019.
Yeah.
Where we had
Atlas that hit South Dakota?
No, this was like Devil's
no,
Lake.
No, Atlas was... okay. Atlas was...
Are you naming winter storms now?
What are we talking about?
There was that blizzard that came through western South Dakota. That blizzard that came through western South Dakota was early in the season. They named it Atlas because it was so strong and dropped so much snow. There were livestock that were completely covered and killed. I think it might have been before 2019, though.
Okay.
Someone will remember and remind us. Yes.
Well, 2019 was the one that hit our state right around the 12th of October, and 20 to 36 inches of snow, 40 plus mile an hour winds. I mean, it was nasty. Well, you want snow this winter.
2016 was Winter Storm Atlas between the 3rd and 5th of October.
There you see. So you had the dates right there.
You even had the name of the storm right.
Wow.
This is why we name winter storms, so we can remember them.
Well, hopefully this winter.
Yeah, like one. One got named.
Hopefully this winter, if we do get a lot of snow, you won't have to do a whole lot of driving in
it. Wouldn't that be cool? I love working remote.
Yeah. But no snow in the forecast right now.
Are you sure there's no snow in the forecast?
There's absolutely no chance of any
snow.
Very positive.
How about ice?
No ice in the forecast.
What about frost? Because I actually had frost on my roof this morning.
Did you? Maybe a little patchy frost.
Not on the ground, but just the roof had a little patchy frost on it. A
little bit possible tomorrow morning.
Cool, cool. We like frost.
A little bit possible tomorrow morning.
A little random.
Now, here's the thing, Bridget. I know that folks don't like frost because it kills off their crop. But at this point, I think everyone's crop is already dead and drying up. Does frost really make a difference this late into the year?
Right now, it would be helpful because you still have some green on the stems on soybeans. So if we had a killing frost, it would actually help that out. Those last few fields that haven't made a maturity yet on corn.
They're really making progress when it's 65 degrees out.
We're going to take what we can get there. But yeah, there are some soybeans that would very much like to see a bit of frost or even some rain just to get things to dry down, finish out, and let's get rid of those green stem spots we're having to combine around in the fields.
So how would rain do that?
Rain, because it's so dry, it wouldn't necessarily help with the green, but because it's so dry, folks would actually like a little rain to swell those pods, the actual bean itself up in the pod, and hope for a little bit more as far as bushels.
Oh, I see. Okay. Makes sense.
It's really dry. I mean, we're seeing moistures on some soybeans that are 9% or less. That's unusual. Mm. And I think I'm going to leave a message with the folks over at the soybean crushing plants, both at Spiritwood and at Jamestown, because when you have that low of moisture soybean come in, I am curious if that affects the amount of oil that can be crushed out of them. So maybe I can find an answer to that question soon.
Nice.
I would imagine that it wouldn't. I feel like an oil content wouldn't be determined based on the moisture content of a bean.
That's a great, I just don't know for sure. Yeah. So I'm willing to ask that question. Oh, I know a guy, a couple of them.
I know a few guys too. I used to live with a few of them. Remember your roommate days? This was a long time ago, Dean, but
I do. Yep.
Yeah, fun times. Bridget, did you used to have roommates, or were you always just kind of a solo act?
No, I lived with a few girls, which generally meant you lived with their boyfriends on and off too, I guess.
Oh,
they
boy.
There.
Sure, of course. Yep.
I only had one bad roommate. All the roommates I had throughout college years and beyond were all really cool, easy to get along with.
This
roommates.
Wasn't the ex-wife, was it?
No. that's a rim shot there.
Yeah, I haven't had a bad roommate, Bridget.
No, mine were pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean,
what about their boyfriends?
I still talk to most of them.
Or any of them. Richards?
Some are still single? Around. Like, they got married.
Oh.
Yeah. Some of those roommates married those guys. not my deal.
Right. All right. Well, what do we got coming up on the program today? We got a few ag topics that we'll be ripping across in the back half of our show. A little bit about climate smart beef labeling, lawsuit with that, as well as weaning time to-do list. And what do we got here? Something about bull riders. So we'll hit those three topics here at the end of our towards the end of our show. We do have a check on your forecast coming up as well. And North Dakota Ag Commissioner Doug Goring is going to be joining us here in just a couple of moments. We'll have him for about a half hour. Bridget, it sounded like you wanted to add something on there about the bull riders or one of the topics.
I did. So bull riding, there's something called the bull bell. Mm. And it's not really a bell that makes noise because
like no
when
bell.
A bull stomps on it, yeah, the bell pretty much gets destroyed. But that bell is a weight on the bull rope that really helps to drop that rope after the rider's done. But when they've used the metal weights before, they've been dangerous to, let's say the rider gets flung off and that weight comes around and hits him. A bullfighter at a rodeo in Mulbridge, South Dakota got hit in the face and needed 17 stitches to fix his eye and face after that. So there is a young guy, his name is Nick Lika, L-I-K-A, and he's created the Lika Bell. And instead of it being metal, it is actually covered in a rubberized material so that when the bull bell swings around, it's still going to hurt because it's weighted, but it's not going to leave cuts and do significant damage. So he's going to try to get that adapted to more rodeos. Never know. Maybe one day we'll see that at the NFR, which is the National Finals Rodeo that happens in early December every year in Las Vegas.
Right on, right on. Well, let's see. We got our Ag Commissioner of North Dakota. Doug is waiting in the backgrounds here. So what do we say we hit up with the American Ag Network? And when we come back, we'll start that conversation up.
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. We'll be right back.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon on Weather and Ag in Focus. Much appreciated that you are here. Hopefully, you're plowing through those acres, combining, lifting beets, doing whatever it is to bring that harvest in. Maybe you're weaning calves, which might get a little bit loud in the yard as you start to separate those. But thanks for taking the time. Oh, yeah. We'll have to talk about that, Justin. All right. Why is weaning loud? There's a lot of reasons. It's like that angry kid in the food line.
Of course.
There.
I knew a few of them.
With us today is our guest, North Dakota Ag Commissioner Doug Goring. And Doug is kind enough to join us to talk about a number of things that are going on in the state, but probably one that's most discussed as of late has been a couple of proposed dairies in the state of North Dakota. And so, Doug, first and foremost, thank you for joining us. And second of all, where are we at in the process? I know that permits have been applied for when it comes to water, environmental quality, et cetera, but what does that look like for a couple of proposed dairies if they actually do come to fruition?
So there's a couple things. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm glad we were able to make it work out. We just moved a few things around and we got a chance to be on here. So I think there's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding about how these all work. But for the most part, I'll tell you, the regulatory side of it belongs to the state, and there are state and federal laws that have to be complied with. So when you look at the Department of Environmental Quality, they cover air quality, they cover water quality issues, which all comes back to ground zero, which is what is your manure management plan? What are some things with respect to the state model zoning ordinance, your setbacks, and how is your facility constructed, built, how is it going to operate? All those things fall underneath the Department of Environmental Quality. They don't tell you how to do it. They just say things that you have to comply with. So like on a manure management plan, they would have to review that. They would make sure that everything's in order, but they also want to collect information from every place, for example, that producers would be applying this to their land. They would also have to have those producers sign off and understand that information collected would be about cropping rotations, because really what they're looking at is how much of these nutrients are going to be utilized on any given year. And in some cases, or I should say in many cases, you really can't rotate back onto that ground and put manure on it unless you're actually utilizing what was put there before. And that involves soil tests every year. It involves making sure that the landowner is complying with the stipulations. Otherwise, you could be actually taken out of the system, and the dairy, in this case, would have to follow up and make sure that you are complying. Otherwise, they have to have an alternative, and that's primarily why, when you look at this situation, they have to have X amount of acres, and generally it's 2 to 3 times more than what they're actually applying on any given year. The other side of that coin is looking at air quality, and this boils down to what's a nuisance smell. Now, there's some new work that's been done. It's being done and has been done in other states. North Dakota is now considering it and looking at it. And in fact, the task force on the zoning ordinances is likely going to provide the legislature with some things to consider going forward. One would be looking at setbacks and using science to determine what those setbacks should look like. Also, there's been some conversations about what they call a windrose. And what that does is it looks at prevailing winds on any given day, any given month, in any given year to determine if counties wish to, they, based off the model zoning ordinance, they could determine that it could actually be a little less if they so choose. But the model zoning ordinance that the state has in place is to make sure that this is the maximum that you can operate at. And so the part of that kind of falls under the Department of Environmental Quality from the standpoint that if there's a complaint, they would have to come out and actually analyze the situation to see if there is a problem. But a lot of the modeling is being done so that it can be taken on. You talked about water supply, and I'm kind of just moving from one issue to the next, so stop me if you
sure.
want.
Sure, that's okay. I'm going to stop you at like 1:30 for a commercial, but until then, have at it.
So this issue has come up about water supply. And in eastern North Dakota, we know that we do have some aquifers out there. We also have some tributaries. We don't have the same amount of water in the same situation that we have in central and western North Dakota. But eastern North Dakota is where we have more population base. And we also have more of those prime growing areas. And we have an infrastructure situation that actually supports a lot more economic activity. So you have I-29 and 94, and you have the crossroads there, but you have access into markets and processing. So that's why eastern North Dakota is probably being considered more so than places further west. Along those lines, water supply becomes an issue, and I will tell you, the state does regulate water supply. We do allocate, but it's not our job to find it for you or to make sure that you have it. That's up to the actual facility to do that work. Now, they may come to the Water Commission, to us on the Water Commission or the Water Resource Department, and ask questions about, you know, what's available. And they may throw scenarios and options out. We'll tell them yes or no. But it's really up to them and the local municipalities, the political subs, to determine how they want to approach a water supply issue. And in the situation, for example, with Richland County, they're actually allocated out in that aquifer. And the only way they'd be able to utilize any water in that aquifer is if someone were to forego or give back part of their allocation. But even if that were to happen, they're still bound by what's been modeled and what's been allocated in that aquifer, meaning they could only use up to that certain amount anyways. That being said, there are other alternatives. You could have rural water systems that could supply water. But they have to make sure that they have allocations that meet the need. And if they don't, then they have to look further beyond that. But all those things have to happen in order for anybody to build. And I guess you could also say, you could go ahead and build something without having all of your resources in line, but then your project's going to sit still, because you're not going to be able to do what you need to do to run your facility. But again, as I said, the state allocates water, and we always make sure we build a whole bunch of cushion into that. But it isn't our job to say yes or no, except on, in this case, the water supply. They have to figure out how they're going to do it and what they're going to do. They may ask to drill test wells and do some checking and compare it against what we have for information. But that's kind of the scenario. That's the situation. And I've heard a lot of speculation. I've heard a lot of people say things like, oh, they're going to do it anyways. No, they can't. No. State and of also, North Dakota owns the waters.
And you know, we've heard folks ask the question, well, just making sure there will be enough for communities, municipalities, especially if we're in a dry season such as we are, and for firefighters to be able to load fire trucks, et cetera. And that's all taken into consideration when these things are being discussed, is what I would understand, correct?
Yes. And in fact, when you look at, and I'll give you an average across the state of North Dakota, it's going to be very specific to every aquifer and water system. But when you look across the state of North Dakota, I believe it's something like only 6 or 7% of the water in our aquifers is actually allocated. And that frustrates irrigators and people petitioning and applying to get water out of an aquifer, because in some cases we'll sit for a long time monitoring and modeling before we ever would allow an application to be approved. It's kind of a first come, first serve deal, and we have to protect all prior applications and prior rights. So
appreciate that, especially if you're someone further up the list.
Yeah. And we have some people out there in Eastern North Dakota that want to tap into some aquifers, and they maybe have already waited. Well, I heard one, 28 years. They still haven't received their application. And it's because that particular aquifer, there's not a comfort level to go forward and permit them yet.
Well, hang tight. We have more questions for you. And again, we are visiting today with North Dakota Ag Commissioner Doug Goring. We will return. We've got bottom of the hour news. But once we get through that, let's continue with our list of questions that we've gotten from listeners, and we'll make sure to answer those for you. I've got a bunch. So we'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to say a thank you to those who are sponsors for our Here We Grow project. We are custom farming 20 acres of corn north of Glendon, Minnesota, and our profits will be donated to Farm Rescue. Red River Retention Authority has been a big part of the project. They wanted to make sure that all that dam water is taken care of and the dam rehabilitation. And I just like the fact that I finally get to say dam as much as I want on the radio, and I only made it to do with water. And then lastly, Gowan Company, they have brought us a Fiance fungicide to make sure that we have a clean and healthy corn crop to take to harvest for their best profits to donate to Farm Rescue. We have a guest with us today, and that is North Dakota Ag Commissioner Doug Goring. And he joins us talking about current issues that are at the forefront of people's minds around the state. One of those things, especially in eastern North Dakota, is a couple of proposed dairies that could be coming in. Commissioner Goring, when you think about those dairies and their proximity for food, or food feedstuffs is what I should call it, how does that help the industry overall? If they're here and they're able to get from the soybean plant, et cetera, what does that do for North Dakota agriculture as a whole? Do you have any statistics or thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, there has been some economic numbers that have been run over the years, and it generally shows animal agriculture has the highest multiplier effect in the economy. If we run out from some older numbers and we looked at multiplier effects, grain farming would generally be about 3.7 times. So for every dollar spent on the farm, it would roll through the economy 3.7 times. When you look at animal agriculture, it has a much, much higher multiplier effect. Just a cow-calf beef operation is about 4.5. When you start to look at a feedlot, you look at, especially dairy, poultry, swine, now you're talking 9 times. It has a multiplier effect that high. And part of the other thing that happens and why farmers generally look for animal agriculture in their community is because of how it supports your local economy, how it really adds value to agriculture. Many times, and I think you guys were talking about before, we love our processing facilities, whether it's Anheuser-Busch's facility, whether it's a crush facility, an ethanol facility, because they're adding value to our crops also. But when you have animal agriculture, they're doing direct contracting with those local farmers. Those farmers aren't subject to any discounts that they may have to deal with when it goes down the pit at an elevator or a facility. they can sell directly. They're selling by the pound. They're selling by the bushel, by the ton, whatever that may be, directly into that facility. And then the other benefit, and I talked about this earlier with manure, people just love it. Talk about a natural, pure product that not only has N, P, and K in it, but it also has a lot of micronutrients, and it also has a lot of microbiology that benefits the soil. So your microbiome is really enhanced, and it just enhances and builds more soil health into your system. People love it. I know in our operation when I was feeding cattle, I always had a three-year benefit wherever I was putting manure. It just really helped to offset the cost of fertility and really enhance production plant health. So that's a big deal about it. But that really is what happens, is you have those acres, that production, that no longer is going down the pit. And I know it causes some consternation with some of our local brokers and elevators because they're going to have less bushels to handle. But when you take that production, you know, off the table, it actually enhances and adds more value to what's left out there. And then the products that are produced, in this case, you're probably looking at cheese or dry milk. Those are markets that are generally outside of the U.S. There'll be some domestic, but U.S. generally doesn't have a problem with dairy. We actually produce far more than we can consume, so it's outside markets we're looking at. And when you look at the global market, economists are saying it's off the charts when you look in the next 10, 12 years when it comes to cheese and dry milk consumption globally, just because of the protein factor. And with that, I would also probably add as a caveat, I do know that there's been some conversations and some talk about if we're adding cows, dairy livestock, into North Dakota's economy and into the state, is there potential for any processing? And I'll tell you that there is talk about doing probably potentially a dry milk or powdered milk facility in North Dakota, and probably the ideal place because you have population, you have labor, and you have resources and infrastructure would likely be somewhere in Cass County.
Mm-hmm. And, well, like you said, when you have that supply, you can do more things with it for processing. That makes a big difference. And labor, well, we got to put things where the labor exists, and that's our biggest population center. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. I didn't want to get over my skis on that, but I do know that that's been part of the conversation, and it's the chicken and an egg thing. So, you know, first you got to have the production to support the processing. But as I understand, it's probably moving towards that.
Hmm. And, fair enough.
And Doug, we've got a email from one of our listeners. Wanted to talk a little bit about the farm bill. He wants to know, what are your thoughts on the farm bill, and has there been any progress at all?
Yeah. Well, in the current state of the farm bill, it has very little hope. Most of agriculture, most of my colleagues, and I say most, not all, don't like its current form and what was suggested. So much is tied into a political agenda. There's a lot of climate change policies and issues in there that are trying to be incorporated into it. And it has nothing to do with food production, feed, fiber, or fuel production. It has nothing to do with food security in this nation. And that's where you saw a lot of groups, a lot of commodity groups. You saw a lot of ag organizations that put the brakes on and said, hey, we want a farm bill. We want a good farm bill. We want something that's relevant, that's got to address research, conservation. It's got to address trade, and it needs to address risk management. So myself and many others have just said, yeah, we want one, but under currently what's being proposed, it's unacceptable.
How, How do you go about getting changes to be implemented in a farm bill? Is that anything that you have a power over as the North Dakota Ag Commissioner, or is this something above you when it comes to whether or not it's Congress or the House that they have to make the changes to it? How do you stop what is being proposed if it's not in the best benefit for agriculture to be changed and modified so that way it is?
Yeah. Well, and it's a group effort. I'll never take credit for the good and bad. Well, if you take credit for something that's good, likely when it turns bad, you have to take the credit too. Mm-hmm. So don't take credit. but it's a group effort. I work with a lot of my colleagues on a lot of these issues, work with commodity groups. They're generally the experts in their areas. So if you're talking about corn, cotton, peanuts, the rice industry, the wheat and soybean industry, they're all at the table and they're all talking about, hey, these are some things we propose and like to see. And when you have, you know, two senators in every state, that means you have agriculture in almost in every state. And that also means they get a big say-so in this. I believe the problem that happened about a year and a half ago, maybe it was 2 years ago, was we had the really good framework and there was the momentum to actually do a farm bill. And then all of a sudden, Senator Stabenow hijacked it with the climate policy stuff. And that's what derailed it. And a lot of senators said, no, we really can't do that. Our producers, our commissioners, secretaries, and directors have all said this is unworkable. And that's what kind of put the brakes on. That's why you didn't get any movement. You didn't get any support. The House actually came up with a pretty good version that was supported by a lot of states and a lot of the groups. And now it's a matter of going back, engaging Congress as soon as we get past the election to figure out what can we reasonably put on the table that really does provide support for agriculture and food production, because ultimately it's the consumer that could be hurt by any, let's say, bad actions or actions of Congress.
We want to say thank you very kindly for joining us today, Commissioner Goring, just to visit about what's going on with North Dakota Ag and how that affects us at a federal level, as you talked about with the farm bill. So thanks for the time today.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Yep. It's great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Anytime. Anytime.
Thank you.
Great.
All right, folks, hang around. We want to go through headlines. We want to touch on the weather and be right back.
Well, welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us. It's October 3rd. 151 right now in the afternoon, and well, what do we have here that has just been issued across the Red River Valley and the northern half of Minnesota? Yours truly, Mr. and Mrs. Frost Advisory and Warning.
Oh, that's my. All.
Just issued for tonight. Yeah, so from about Thief River over towards Grafton Devil's Lake, freeze warning is in effect for tonight. From Grand Forks south through Fargo, Wahpeton over into Lakes Country, we've got a frost advisory that has just been issued for overnight tonight. So expect, obviously, temperatures in the far northern valley into northwest Minnesota will get a little bit closer to the freezing mark. I still think we'll be right around the mid-30s here in the FM area and over into Lakes Country, which is a light frost. I just don't think this should not be a killing frost, but it could definitely be at least our first. I don't even know if I want to say. You think it's going to be a widespread frost? I think it's going to be hit and miss.
It's going to be hit or miss.
Yeah.
And if the southerly winds pick up a little stronger than what they're anticipated to be right now, it might be a very patchy thing.
Right.
But the potential's there. If the wind is light for a prolonged period of time as we head into the early morning hours between probably 5:30 and 7:30 in the morning tomorrow, maybe 6 and 7:30. That's where we're going to see that patchy frost developing. And it'll first accumulate up on rooftops, and then the surfaces will wait a little longer or we'll need to be a little colder to get that frost right. to form.
And then we warm up tomorrow afternoon. I mean, southerly winds will kick in. We'll top out in the low 70s. And this weekend is going to be almost a repeat of what we had last Friday.
Monday.
Was it Monday?
Maybe it was both.
I was on vacation. I thought it was Friday.
Well, Monday was very windy.
Okay. We're going to have a repeat of that.
Let's just say both days. Yeah. It's the valley.
We're gonna have winds gusting well over 40 as we head into the weekend. First out of the southwest on Saturday and then the northwest on Sunday. And then we mellow things out next week. Next week looks pretty tranquil with temperatures in the 60s and 70s. Yep.
They got high wind watches in effect for the western half of North Dakota. That's for wind gusts upwards of 60 miles per hour on Saturday. So fun things to look forward to. Yay. Great day to go kite surfing.
Or golfing.
You ever go kite surfing?
Have not.
I know a guy.
Yeah?
He's going to try calling in now.
Because he wants to kite surf?
Nice. You know, he's a kite surfer.
The water is a little chilly.
Actually, I don't think the water is all that cold.
Well, if...
Figuratively speaking, yeah,
if you
at
go
least.
until you fall into it.
Typically, you want to wear a wetsuit.
I would think so.
But I don't know what the lake temperatures are. I know they haven't flipped yet, so they can't be that cold.
No, but I wouldn't want to.
I don't think Endon can help you with a lake temperature at this point.
Well, like, maybe we need to get Daryl to jump on board and start putting some water probes out there.
There you go.
That could be a whole new grant for his department is to monitor water conditions.
There's an idea.
He could throw little pH sensors on there and
right.
K sensor, all sorts of fun stuff. You don't have to have people go out there and do water samples anymore because Daryl's just 24/7 live streaming it.
Right. Good idea. That would be nice and easy.
It would be. You have a clarity sensor on there to determine what the clarity is of the water, everything. That's just all automated nowadays. Why not? Of course, you got to take it out every winter or it's going to freeze.
Right?
But, but still, I mean, that gives somebody a job to go out there and take them out and put them back in the spring.
See, there you go.
Well, can't you just take it out, drill a hole, and put it back in? Like,
well, you could. Exactly. You could do that. You could have an insulated pipe that sits or floats in the water. I don't know how you do that, but it just stays warm and keeps open water. I don't know.
There are water probes, so you could check that out. You just never know when it might work.
Daryl might be listening. I'm surprised our kite surfer hasn't called. He must not be listening today.
Kite surfing. Didn't expect that one today, but thanks for sharing.
Yeah, it's kind of like our rutabaga picker.
Oh, the rutabagas come every once in a while.
Yeah, the rutabagas
just so you know,
do.
every time rutabaga shows up, it's usually my college friends doing... No, yeah, they're trying to derail me. They're betting on something. They're doing whatever. So if you hear rutabaga, that's just a sideline situation
an ongoing, long inside joke. Well, I bet you can't bet you can't say rutabaga in your show today. Good luck saying rutabaga today.
And that started when we started the show. The first month we were on air.
Oh, that's been going on a long time. Well, hey, we got some stuff to talk about here.
No problem.
First, I just want to pump something that we're going to be doing tomorrow. I got a gem of a treat that we're going to be playing for
tomorrow afternoon.
And this is actually a really good little topping point. And this is the infamous and famous, however you want to put it, 1957 F5 tornado that hit Fargo. So we're going to be kind of running down that whole little portion of history and how that tornado actually changed the field of meteorology forever. Right here in Fargo was the main inspiration that eventually changed everything about weather. So we're going to be talking about that, and we'll be playing a little interview segment tomorrow about that. It'll be very, very interesting.
That's going to be really cool. So wait a sec. When you say that's the 1957 tornado, is what that's all based off of?
That's the F5 Very tornado cool. that ripped up the North End and downtown Fargo.
Yeah.
Killed
Golden
10
Ridge,
people.
I believe.
Yes.
And mostly children. There was a family that their children were killed in that accident that tornado.
It was actually one of five tornadoes that spawned off of that storm. It even ripped up north of Hawley is where that they ended up having tornadoes confirmed from that same storm.
And that was where Ted Fujita, Dr. Fujita, started his research. It really got going with the research on how to categorize tornadoes. That's where he started his F scale.
Mm-hmm. So we got a whole bit tomorrow for it.
Okay, I'm sure I'm going to have questions. Actually, it won't matter though. I'll just have to send you my questions.
Yeah, right. Bridget's off tomorrow.
I'll send you my questions.
Bridget's off tomorrow.
Bridget's got an important assignment tomorrow afternoon.
So yeah, I'll just send you my questions.
Sure.
But that tornado that would left a lasting impression in this region for many, many people.
Yeah, it sure did. We got a quick moment to talk about a lawsuit in climate smart beef labeling. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Environmental Working Group, which generally I just classify them as a pot stirring type of organization, they're challenging claims, but not the spaghetti sauce. So they are challenging claims made by Tyson Foods that some beef products have climate smart benefits. Tyson began labeling that, talking about specifically regenerative agriculture related to livestock production, et cetera. And the Environmental Working Group is, along with a couple of other animal rights groups, are taking a stand, creating a lawsuit saying that those claims are unclear. I don't know that this is going to go anywhere. I think it's just there to make noise.
Ah, right on.
But that's just a thought. Just
making noise is, it's making noise. And with that, we're out of time. We're back tomorrow, 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Have yourself a great day. Jay Thomas Show's next. Okay, bye.